Hey everyone, welcome to the New Insight podcast, where we interview the most important movers and shakers in ophthalmology and give you new insights on the innovations ahead. I'm your host, Viral Sheth. My guest today is Cedric Francois. If you've been listening to the industry news recently, then you know that Cedric is the co-founder of Apellis, which recently had the first ever therapeutic for geographic atrophy approved by the FDA. This disease has been a huge unmet need in our space, and the buzz about finally having an option for our patients continues to grow since the drug's approval. Cedric has served as a member of the board of directors for Apellis and as the president and chief executive officer since September 2009. Cedric received his MD degree from the University of Leuven in Belgium and his PhD in physiology from the University of Louisville. Following postgraduate training in pediatric and transplant surgery, Cedric joined the research team that performed the first successful hand transplantation in Louisville in 1999. In our conversation, we touch on a number of topics. Of course, we talk about the approval of Syfovre for geographic atrophy, but just as importantly, we talk about how this approval was the culmination of a 20-year journey to get the drug approved. We talk about how the company started and some of the serendipity required to keep the process moving forward. We talk about his evolving role in the company and that constant struggle and interplay between being a physician, a scientist, and as the corporate executive. We get into how we think the approach to geographic atrophy will evolve over the next few years, and we cap off our discussion with a look ahead with what Cedric thinks will shape the future in retina. So I'm thrilled to be able to give you listeners some new insights from a true innovator in our field. And without further delay, please enjoy my conversation with Cedric Francois. Cedric, thanks so much for joining us today on New Insights. We're really just kind of excited to have you on, especially with everything you guys have got going on these days. And so thank you for carving out the time. I want to just start out first, congratulations on the approval and early success of pegcetacoplan or Syfovre. And just tell us about what a whirlwind this has been in the last few months, and obviously many months leading up to that, but really the last few months and what it's been like from your perspective.
Yeah, thank you so much. And thank you for inviting me. I mean, it's a real pleasure to share our experience with your audience. As you said, a few months. These last few months are kind of the culmination of about 20 years of hard work, right? to see the product get into the real world and see what we hope it will be able to do for patients. So maybe in a couple of sentences, so pegcetacoplan is a molecule that controls complement factor C3 centrally in this very ancient complement pathway that we have in our immune system. And about 20 years ago, we started studying the role that this mechanism may play in age-related macular degeneration, and more specifically in geographic atrophy. And of course, you know, through the many, many trials and tribulations that biotech typically has, but in this case, maybe even more complex because of how complex the disease is, to be able to get across the finish line was incredibly rewarding. And to now have the first and only product for GA on the market, something that we take as a really important responsibility. The key feature of this drug, I think up front, and the one that we're most excited about, is that this product has increasing effects over time. So in other words, the longer you use this product, the more important the slowdown of the geographic atrophy process becomes. And as we launch this product in the real world, you know, and seeing the very important uptake that it has found, of course, commensurate with the unmet needs, to also see, the safety profile emerge as favorably as it has. All of that has been really gratifying.
So, you know, you mentioned a couple of things. You talked about the timeline of the company and working on this for 20 years. You know, you and I have gotten the chance to interact. We've gotten a chance to really work with the Apellis team, whether it's through the clinical trials or now kind of in the real world. And so I've got an appreciation of kind of where you guys came from. But I think for the people that are listening that really don't know the Apellis story, you know, you mentioned kind of two decades in the making. I know you co-founded the company back in 2009, so almost 14 years ago. So walk us through kind of what the rationale was of hey, you know, what was that moment where you said, hey, we've got something here, we're going to start a company, We're going to take it, you know, as far as we can. Give us a little bit of that historical perspective now that we're in 2023 and we can appreciate the final product. And a lot of people don't realize, you know, how much time, effort, and risk it takes to do something like this.
Yeah, Drek, thank you for that question. I mean, I think we only have about half an hour, so it would probably take me a few days to take you through all the details. But I mean, look, many things kind of have to come together. And if I'd have to kind of hone in on the key moments in time, the first one is, of course, the year 2005, which I think is kind of the grand slam year of the retina. I mean, it was the year in which the first anti-VEGF came on the market in the form at the time of Macugen, of course. Also the year in which the first data on Lucentis from the phase 3 became available. All of that indicating how important anti-VEGF was going to be in the treatment of wet AMD. And that exact same year, those papers came out simultaneously in the spring in Science, indicating an association between complement and macular degeneration. And we were very fortunate at the time to be studying complement in macular degeneration in this little laboratory in Louisville, Kentucky. They used to call us the Three Stooges. You know, we were kind of at the, you know, I'm a physician by background, had been doing my PhD, and then was working with two young postdocs in a company called Potencia Pharmaceuticals, which was the predecessor to Apellis. And Potencia Pharmaceuticals at the time was kind of this fledgling little effort to understand the role that macrophages played in chronic inflammatory diseases. And we became particularly interested in macular degeneration around 2003 and 2004 from that angle of macrophages. And you could say, well, I mean, how did you know that complement was going to be something important there, etc.? Well, really, the way in which this happened is we, you know, were at the University of Louisville, you know, walking through a corridor, saw a poster on complement, and Pascal de Châtelet and myself, my co-founder and myself, we looked at each other. We're like, you know what, controlling complement would be a great way of changing macrophage behavior. And then we went back to the lab and we Googled complement inhibitors. It's literally as serendipitous as that. And that's how we ended up on this journey. So that was 2005. And all of a sudden, because of these genome-wide association studies that were published in 2005, complement became very popular. In 2009, that allowed us to transact with Alcon, which took our program from Potencia at the time, and then was itself acquired by Novartis. And when we started Apellis in 2010, initially we were focused on rare diseases. So, you know, some of the people in the audience may know that we have another approved product from about 2 years ago called Empaveli for a rare disease called paroxysmal nocturnal hemoglobinuria. That is a subcutaneous product with the same active pharmaceutical ingredient as Syfovre. And that was developed for this rare systemic indication, PNH. That was what Apellis was doing in the beginning. And in 2014, again, serendipitously, we had the opportunity to bring back the intellectual property from Potencia and start working on the eye with this exact same molecule. And when we went to the board and we said, look, we want to take pegcetacoplan and develop it in geographic atrophy, the question was, well, what is the scientific rationale behind it, right? I mean, and there was a lot of evidence from these genome studies, etc. But at the time, you know, I have to say a very important factor here was that Genentech was studying lampalizumab and had just had a successful study in the so-called Mahalo study, which again, many in the audience may remember at the time. And there was a lot of hope that complement would be successful in macular degeneration. We went to the board and we said, look, C3 within this complement pathway has a lot of additional advantages over complement factor D, which was the target of lampalizumab. We think that we can be differentiated from lampalizumab. And then lo and behold, the phase 3 trials with lampalizumab unfortunately failed, right? So had the sequence been different, had we known that lampalizumab didn't work in GA, we probably would never have been able to raise the money to do our own phase 3 clinical trials with pegcetacoplan. And then last but not least, you know, of course, the readout of the phase 3 clinical trial. Here you have two very large studies, 600 subjects each, treated monthly or every other month, one study, beautiful results with incredible p-values, showing that we could slow down the progression of GA over the course of 1 year. And then the other study, the Derby study, which missed the primary endpoint, and where at the time the statistician came into my office and said, "Hey, Cedric, you know, we won the inverse lottery." And I'm like, "What do you mean?" He's like, "Well, it turns out that in the Derby study, we had very aggressive patients in the active arm compared to the sham control." And so in other words, and I said, like, "How do you know that?" He's like, "Well, after 2 months, 2 months into the study, the active arm was already 20% worse than the sham. So we basically needed 4 to 5 months for the lines to cross back over into the right territory. And 1 year was not enough to show the differentiation of the drug against the sham control." And so at the time, we assumed that over time that would correct itself. And indeed, after 2 years, Derby and Oaks look remarkably similar for both dosing regimens. And I'm just touching the surface here of all of the things we had to go through to bring this product to the finish line, but just very fortunate that we were able to get there and then be able to offer this to patients today.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you touched on a number of topics that I think our listeners are going to be better for understanding, right? I think, you know, one of the first things you said is you took the historical context and went back to 2005. I can remember 2005 vividly. That's when I started my training. And I remember, and I think about this all the time because we train fellows today. And I think about how when I entered the retina world, we'd already had a treatment with the anti-VEGFs for neovascular AMD, and then, you know, very, very soon after for DME. And so we had just met these huge unmet needs. And now, you know, you guys have shifted the paradigm so that our fellows graduating today, I have one that's graduating in a few weeks, is going to enter a world where they've got an option for what we had considered historically an unmet need in geographic atrophy. And I think conversations like this are important to anchor them on understanding where we've come from and how these treatments get to us because of, you know, all the hard work and to your point and to your word, exactly the serendipity, right? I mean, I think it's fascinating to think about if lampalizumab, you know, we were part of some of those trials. And thinking about how lampalizumab could be considered a failure, but when you look at it in historical context, was a key kind of driver in how a lot of these other platforms were able to take off. And so I think you giving us insight into that is really just quite important for us to understand the journey that it takes and sometimes the sheer luck that we have to fall on to get to where we are today. So thank you for that. I mean, I think that's really important. So now, you know, you've taken us back and we've looked backwards and figured out how we got to 2023. But then the question is, well, now that we're here, now that we have a product, now that we've, you know, been in the real world for a few months and you've gotten to see the uptake and quite frankly, you know, maybe even to many people's surprise, the quick uptake, where do you kind of say, you know, are you surprised at how quickly people have kind of gravitated towards the treatment? And looking forward a year, 2 years from now, when we potentially have, you know, another agent on the market, multiple agents, multiple options, you know, where do you see things kind of going in the next couple of years as we as clinicians get more comfortable with the options, as the landscape kind of continues to mature, patients become more understanding of why we're treating? Where do you see things going in the next couple of years in that sense?
Yeah. Well, so first of all, I'm not surprised at all by the uptake. I think a little bit of the misconception that may have existed around the unmet need is that, you know, when a retina doctor sees patients with exudative disease, you know, you will see them very frequently, right? I mean, let's say on average every 2 months or so. Patients with geographic atrophy, half of patients don't even see a retina doc. And the other half that do see them will maybe visit you once a year, right? I mean, you know this very well from your practice. So if you kind of narrow that down to the day-to-day visits, I mean, if you have the same number of patients with GA compared to wet AMD on a daily basis, you would see 6 times more patients with wet AMD, right? So it's a little bit deceptive how many subjects there actually are with GA that are under the radar. And the word is spreading very quickly. And quite frankly, a lot of the demand comes from the patient population, you know, who has always thought that there was nothing for them to slow down their disease. and who now see that an option is available and will reach out to the retina practice. Thankfully, in the retina world, we have, of course, you know, with Syfovre, a procedure that is very similar to the anti-VEGF injections. So it's something that you and your colleagues are very used to doing. You're used to administering it, you're used to processing it, etc. So the rapid uptake is also a reflection of this fact, and we're incredibly grateful for that, right? That retina docs know how to do this, are ready to do this, are ready to offer this product. And I think finally then also the fact that the safety again, right? I mean, when you launch a product on such a massive scale, there's of course always the piece of like, did we miss something in our clinical trials, right? I mean, is there something that is, you know, kind of lurking in the background? And that certainly doesn't seem to be the case right now, with, you know, tens and tens of thousands of injections already having been done. So that is incredibly rewarding, and we're incredibly grateful for that. Moving forward, one of the elements that I'm particularly proud of that our team accomplished over the years was that during development, it can be tempting to change course, right? I mean, you start with a hypothesis, you see something, you're like, well, this may work better on these patients, and you start changing designs between your clinical trials. That is a temptation that we fiercely resisted over time. We said, look, we believe that we will have an effect on all patients with GA. Let's study all patients with GA. We may find subpopulations where there is a better effect, but we want a product where we start with everyone. And the FILLY trial, which was our phase 2 clinical trial, was a trial that was, by design, pretty much a carbon copy in 246 subjects of the CHROMA and SPECTRI studies, which were the phase 3 clinical trials for lampalizumab at the time, also with monthly and every other month injections, etc., etc., and the same way of measuring it with autofluorescence, the same way of analyzing it as well. When we went into phase 3, we stuck to that paradigm. We said same dosing regimen, same types of patients, same types of posology, even the same reading center. I mean, we stuck religiously to not changing the equation so that we could actually have a huge data set to derive our information from. And that results right now in, you know, 2 phase 3 clinical trials. And by the way, the phase 2 FILLY trial is also considered registrational by the FDA. So we really have 3 studies here. But the 2 phase 3 clinical trials, where we have approximately 12,000 injections that were studied in 1,200 patients for a full period of 2 years. And what it taught us, and again, kind of the 2 cardinal features of this drug, is one, is that the longer you treat, the more the lesion growth slows down. And because this is like a forest fire, that's really important, right? If you take month 18 to 24, you start going north of 30% slowdown, both with monthly as well as every other month dosing. And you see that both in foveal as well as non-foveal patients. And we expect that in the GALE study to continue to deepen. The longer you treat, the more it slows down. And we'll find out in the next couple of months where exactly that number falls out. But I think that is something that is really important. It is a first step in the direction of having a treatment for these patients. The initial efficacy may be limited, but over time it gets more pronounced. And we couldn't be happier with where we stand right now.
So I want to drill down on that point you just made. You know, we've had some folks on the show, and we've talked to clinicians, and we've talked a little bit about some of the difficulties in explaining, you know, what we're doing for the patient, right? With neovascular AMD, with DME, when vision is more acutely impacted, it's very easy to kind of explain to a patient what we're doing and why we're doing it. And the feedback is there. They can see better, and they're doing better. They see scans, and they see the improvements. And so it's easy to kind of keep them engaged. But we've talked about it as clinicians, you know, and the point you made, I think, is really the take home, which is, you know, we have to play the long game here, right? We need to understand that what we're doing is kind of starting a patient on the journey. You use the forest fire analogy, and I think that's one that we use in clinics, and we have to use those types of analogies to help people understand, because it is a little more conceptual for them. And, you know, you mentioned, look at months 18 to 24 and potentially beyond is when we start to see that real delta between, you know, where patients were going and where they are going now, and that difference you're making and the impact you're having on them. And so that kind of delayed gratification, I think, is important to convey to patients, but also to providers that are new to this concept of treating GA, or that are still hesitant to treating these patients. So what kind of pearls, and what have you seen, and what's the feedback been from your workforce in how we can make sure people understand, providers in particular, that look, we do have to communicate that this is a long game that we're playing for these patients. And in the end, you know, a year, 2 years, 3 years from now, patients will be better off because they've taken this journey with us.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, look, you touched on what I believe is a very important point, Viral, which is that in a clinical trial, you have a very short, time frame, like a momentary lapse, right, in which you try to derive a ton of information. But at the end of the day, you want to be able to evaluate that over longer periods of time. Patients with geographic atrophy are going to be on a decade of treatment, maybe longer, right? I mean, I always give, when people ask me, like, what's the difference between wet AMD and GA, I'm like, well, typically a GA patient is a little bit older than a wet AMD patient, also because the diagnosis is often done later than with wet AMD. So think about it like the 80 to 90 year old time frame. That's kind of the typical standard time frame for a patient with geographic atrophy. And that's where you can hopefully save a couple of years of good vision for these patients, right? Now, the clinical trials were 2 years. We want to be able to understand what it means to be on treatment for a decade, right? And as we gather more information, and we have the so-called GALE extension study, which is 3 years beyond the two-year framework of Derby and Oaks, during that period of time, we continue to evaluate how much the slowdown is. We also continue to evaluate, and this is really important and a little more sophisticated, but for this audience, it will resonate, I believe, is that the immediate effect of pegcetacoplan on photoreceptor cell protection seems to be near complete. So in other words, photoreceptor cells seem to be almost completely protected by pegcetacoplan from the first injection. And you could say, well, wait a second. I mean, you know, you see in the first year 20%, the second year 30%. What is that? Well, what we measure is autofluorescence, which measures the RPE cells. So what we really do is slow down RPE cell death with increasing slowdown over time. And the photoreceptor cells follow the RPE cells. That's something that we are very clearly starting to understand from our OCT analyses. So all of these are things that allow us to better understand what it means over the long run to be on treatment. And two things will happen. I think over time, we're going to start to understand better how function follows the slowdown in the lesion progression. And secondly, to also have the imaging technologies available with artificial intelligence, which is making huge leaps here as well, to know what you are really doing in terms of saving these photoreceptor cells in the retina that doesn't require complex interpretations by the eye care professional.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly the message that we have to kind of convey in order for people to understand. And I think you're right. I think our understanding is still evolving, right? I think we looked, you know, when we look back at some of the LAMPA studies, we were primarily looking at autofluorescence as a driver in kind of understanding disease progression. But I think you're right. We're learning more and more that there's other ways to look at this disease, and including, you know, the importance of OCT and just daily kind of diagnostics that we've kind of maybe overlooked for our GA patients. And so I think it's reassuring to kind of to see our understanding evolve in that sense. And so Let me ask you a question. This is a question I like to ask our guests that are both clinicians and physicians, but also executives, right? So help us understand kind of the balance that you have to strike, right? As someone that's a physician, understands the science, did your PhD in these things, and the excitement you derive from the science aspect to now kind of balancing it out with that executive level kind of a function of the company, and how you have to balance those things, because I think it's a unique perspective that you can offer, especially for some of these companies that are a little bit younger, that are kind of early on in the innings. You mentioned kind of we stuck with the plan, right? I think that's there's a huge kind of drive to kind of continue to pivot as the industry changes, but you guys sticking to the plan has obviously paid off. So talk to us about just from that executive viewpoint and how sometimes maybe that clashes from potentially the physician aspect of you.
Well, yeah, thank you, Viral. You're literally asking all my favorite questions in the world. And well, we've known each other for a long time, so that doesn't surprise me. But here is the, I think that, I mean, from my vantage point, you know, I like to think of myself as a physician first, a scientist second, and a CEO third. That's professionally, of course. And the key, I think, and what also culturally really permeates at Apellis is that that drive to be deeply rooted in science and dedicated to patient care is something that I think is very, very core to who we are as a company. So in many ways, we always tried to have the business aspects follow those first two important aspects and put that always first in line. Look, building a company with my background, in my opinion, relies on one single thing, and that is surrounding yourself with people that are smarter and better than you and that fill in all the gaps that you inevitably are not able to fill. And when people ask me, like, I mean, we are now approximately 850 people, something like that, in that neighborhood. You know, what was the hardest or the biggest growing pain? And I think it's the fact that when you start a company in the beginning and you're just a few people, you have to be creative. You have to do 10 things at the same time. You have to do things that you've never done before because nobody else will do them otherwise. But then at the same time, when you do drug development, at some point, you know, pardon my French, but you can't fuck around anymore, right? I mean, there are processes, there is quality, there is incredible rigor and quality associated with what you do. I mean, you end up, you start off on a journey of creativity and freedom, and you end up injecting a product in the eyes of millions of people, right? I mean, you cannot afford a single mistake in those final stages. It needs to be exquisite. Those are very different forces at work. And having that transition from that kind of free-floating scientific concept to a hardcore, super narrowly defined final product is reflected in the people that you hire as well. And I always compare it to, you know, you have a bunch of pirates and they land on an island. And there's a bunch of tribes there that have lived there for thousands of years. That is a clash of cultures that I think is very similar to what you find in companies like ours, right? And that can end in two things, you know. They start murdering each other and hating each other and nothing happens. Or the pirates see the value that the islanders have. They know all the crevices. They understand the animals, the poisons on the island and everything. They understand the value of that and don't look down on the fact that there's age-old processes in place. And similarly, the people that are on the island can appreciate the creativity that these pirates bring that can lead to innovations that they probably wouldn't have thought of because they're too stuck in their ways, right? When you can make those two things work together well, I think that is the secret sauce to success.
Yeah, I think that's fascinating. I love the pirate analogy. And I think, you know, as we round the corner here, you know, you're starting to now look ahead. And so what's next for Apellis? I mean, are you thinking, you know, pipeline? What do you want to do and accomplish in the next few years, other than obviously continue to grow the understanding of GA and the treatment and maturing that market? But where are you looking down the road at this point?
We would like to stop RPE cell death the way we stop photoreceptor cell death. And I think that is for us the next frontier. I mean, the effects that we see on photoreceptor cells are absolutely extraordinary. And I do not believe that this is neurodegeneration at the end of the day, right? I mean, the eye is the brain. It is mind-blowing to see how fast and complete the protection seems to be on the photoreceptor cells. So with the RPE cells, there is something else that is in place still that means that you have these increasing effects over time, but it takes a couple of years, right, to really get into very meaningful slowdowns. Is there a way for us to accelerate that efficacy profile? That for us is really important. And then also to work, of course, on the convenience. We think having the ability to dose every 2 months with the safety and efficacy profile that we have is fantastic. But, you know, ideally we go to, in the perfect world, a once and done treatment, right? I mean, or something that is much more convenient for patients and physicians.
Yeah, fantastic. Okay, so last question. I'm gonna take you away from being Cedric the CEO, and I want you to be Cedric the dreamer, the scientist, and you know, think about how, you know, we talked about 2005, anti-VEGFs changed the game for many of us entering the field at that time. 2023 is going to be looked at, you know, historically as a year that changed things for us in GA. 10 years from now, you know, what is the game changer in our field, in retina and ophthalmology? And you cannot use any Apellis pipeline as an answer. So I want to take you away from that. and just talk now as a scientist and as again, like I said, as a dreamer, that someone is going to look back, you know, 20 years, 30 years from now and say, hey, that really changed the game for us in the year 2033.
I truly believe that in the next 10 to 20 years, we are going to end up in a place where imaging allows us to see the very, very first sign of trouble in a way that is automated, so that even an optometrist, you know, without proper training would have a, you know, an OCT machine tell that optometrist this patient needs to be seen and action needs to be taken. And I believe that that patient will receive a single treatment. Possibly still with an intravitreal injection, but maybe something systemic, but a once and done solution to break the immunological cycle that is out of balance. I think moving away from kind of the symptomatic interventions that we are used to towards once and done solutions, that is hopefully what's in the future. And also, I think 10 years is too short, but hopefully, you know, 20 years is the right place to think of.
I love it. Yeah, and I agree. I think we're going to be moving more towards a personalized approach, and you know, maybe driven by AI and things like that. Like you said, much more automated in nature, and taking some of that decision making away from clinicians and really standardizing it to some degree. So I agree with that. Listen, Cedric, I want to appreciate explain my appreciation for your time. You know, you've spent time during a very busy part of the process for Apellis, and we want to just thank you for that. And best of luck as we kind of see things move forward. And as clinicians, we really want to kind of show appreciation for what you guys do, what the company does, what your employees do, and just where the industry is going in general. So we really appreciate that.
Thank you, Viral. I mean, our gratitude, honestly, is towards you and, you know, all the investigators that helped us get this drug to where it is, to the patients that helped us get there, and for being there as an amazing force in place to be able to offer this product to patients. So thank you.
Thank you for listening in to the New Insight Podcast. We really appreciate your time. Be sure to subscribe to our channel on your preferred listening or watching platform. And if you're interested in more ophthalmology news or other podcasts, visit hcplive.com and check out our offerings. For now, I'm Dr. Viral Sheth. Hope to see you next time to discuss what's new in sight.